Deep breath. Okay, you ready?
I think so.
Yeah. Okay, Anish, welcome to Brand Game Strong.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
So excited to have you. So I want to hear from you. Tell me about what you do and just a little bit about yourself. Introduce yourself to us.
Well, my name is Anish. I am a lawyer. I was born and raised in East London in Ilford. I spent the first sort of 18 years of my life in East London, so proper Ilford boy. I loved it. Then at the age of 18, that was the first time I'd really left home and left London. Quite a significant part of kind of the next chapter in my life in terms of, you know, discovering who I am, making very different sort of friends from different backgrounds and really just starting to explore myself and the world.
Mm. Where did you move to?
So university, I went to Cambridge. I was there for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And quite different places, Ilford to Cambridge. But both were such and still are such important parts of my life. Mm-hmm. It was a different world. It was something that, you know, I'd never really, not necessarily not prepared myself for, but it was just so different. And I've learned so much from, you know, both experiences, and I'm very grateful to have had such two kind of, I'm not necessarily polar opposites, but just two very different experiences of the world. And I feel like now, post university, I feel like I'm kind of the best of all the different worlds that sort of collided in my early years. And, you know, there'll always be a part of me that's, you know, very proud of being from Ilford, from Redbridge, and then very proud about going to Cambridge and exploring a very different part of my identity. And then there's the whole sort of sexuality thing. And I feel like I'm now at a stage in my life where I'm just so content.
Yeah.
Everything's just come together in the last sort of few years. And I'm really happy. Because I think there were definitely stages of my life where there was kind of like an identity, I wouldn't say crisis, but I was just confused about, you know, who I was because of these different, you know, from an outsider perspective, potentially quite different extremities.
Yeah.
Of different lives, the people that I was around. And I'm really happy. I'm really happy to be here. And I just feel very kind of, I feel very calm.
Yeah. I can sense that in your presence right now, because I feel like you're so comfortable speaking about possibly the really great things, but also some of the dark things that you've been through. And that's kind of what I like, the gist I get when we're talking. I feel like you are giving back. You're somebody who you can tell when someone's been through the trenches at times and has come out like blossoming and trying to help others. And it's just so lovely to see. And I'm really, really glad that we're here. We're talking about it. And I really hope that that your story actually maybe helps someone listening who might be going through it right now, you know, or may have come out of it and realizes that actually they're not the only ones who have gone through some of the difficult times. And to see you so comfortable, it really warms my heart. So I'm really glad to hear that. And I actually, going back to how we met, it's actually very like linked to what we're talking about, because we met on a night out. And I remember we both kind of were in this phase of just like going out a lot. And I'm very much a huge, you know, LGBTQ+ ally. And I'd come out to these nights out. And they were, I think it was Desi Boys in London. Yeah, shout out.
Yeah.
And I remember I saw you and you were kind of just there like, oh my God, like let's have shots. And you were that person who was just like, you know, bringing the group together and you were like the life of the party. And I remember coming home from that night and losing a few Uber rating points. because I definitely needed to get the Uber driver to stop a few times.
Yeah, my bad influence.
but no, that I love that because I feel like that was such a celebration of,
yeah,
kind of, you know, who we are, community, identity, our like ethnicity, and it was just a really nice way to,
yeah,
I guess, start a friendship.
Yeah.
But I want to start off by just asking you a little bit about, I guess, what does your identity mean to you, and what did it mean to you when you were growing up in Ilford as a young little Indian boy?
Yeah, first of all, amazing to have met you. And I'm so grateful to have had that kind of experience with you. I think it was, in terms of just touching on that particular kind of world, I think that was like the first time I'd ever delved into kind of LGBTQ South Asian nightlife. And I was so happy. And yeah, I'm still so happy in a lot of those spaces. And yeah, I'm very grateful to have met you. But in terms of, yeah, identity, I had a really great upbringing. It was very kind of, we had a lot of independence, but then also this sense of Indian, Hindu, Punjabi identity. You know, I had such a strong affinity to that. I loved it. You know, we would go to the movies, we would cook Indian food every day. You know, I think Friday would be our pizza day and then the rest was Indian and, you know, with a few pastas and things thrown in the middle. And I had such a strong love for my Indian identity. And I think that's something that's never quite gone away throughout life. And, you know, my school was, I would say, 90% South Asian. So I never felt like I was the odd one out. I always felt very secure in that side of my identity. And I know that's quite unusual, I think, for many people that I've met who are South Asian. Often, you know, they've been maybe the one or one of a very few. So I feel very lucky in that respect to have never had any sort of identity crisis with being South Asian. I think, I wouldn't say a crisis, but I think the struggles then came in sort of my early teenage years when I started to realize that, you know, I wasn't necessarily straight. And I think then became the slight conflict of, okay, how does this work when I'm Indian in terms of marrying these two different potential identities together? You know, obviously back then I wasn't entirely clear, you know, wasn't certain in my head I was gay. I was kind of suppressing it because I knew it wasn't the right time for me to explore that at secondary school.
How old were you?
I must have been, you know, it would have been 13, 14, 15 when I realized that actually, I think, you know, I'm not straight.
How did you realize?
I think, you know, Bollywood definitely had a lot to play in terms of just having those imageries in my head of like the Bollywood actors. And, you know, I was obviously too young to be able to, you know, I didn't sexualize it. That wasn't really something I knew of, but it was enough for me to realize, oh, okay, I think I'm a bit more attracted or happier or more excited to see particular actors in movies. And then over time I realized, okay, I think this means that I might be gay, but I didn't know because, you know, I didn't feel safe to explore it, especially in my teenage years. You know, I was very focused on, well, actually, you know, I knew that there would potentially come a time where I would have to confront it and that possibly life would be quite tricky for me. And I knew that education was what was going to help me get the independence to potentially confront those issues and essentially be more independent and be able to kind of be financially secure if I ever were to come out and something would go wrong. So, you know, I wasn't the best of student from, you know, I always had difficulties with studying with my attention. And so up until I would say like early part of year 10, I wasn't the brightest student. You know, I would get really poor grades. And, you know, that was fine because I had a sister who was super intelligent and I felt like maybe she was the one that was meant to be the intelligent one. And it's fine if I just kind of just kind of went along and did my own thing. And then when having this realization of, oh my God, I'm going to have to stand on my 2 feet one day if I was ever to confront this issue. You know, I had no idea how my family would react or the community. I had no idea who was gay in India at that time. Mm. And the only way I saw out of that situation was having my own, my financial security. And then what happened was I kept resitting all my modules for my GCSEs. I worked my way up from sort of D's, E's, then I resit them. I think back then you could resit. Then I would get, you know, a C, and then suddenly resitting again, and I was getting kind of A's and A stars. And then at that point, I was like, oh, wow, okay, I can actually do it. And potentially this kind of route in towards education may be the one thing that actually helps and saves me. And it did, because, you know, 2 weeks after I started my first job, I came out because I felt safe, and I'd worked my whole life up to that point to be able to stand on my 2 feet. And if anything went wrong, I would be okay because I had my own money. And that's kind of what I tell a lot of people kind of, sorry, I don't know why I'm getting a bit emotional, but it's kind of just felt so full circle. Like, and I tell a lot of people, you know, who are often quite, they have a yearning to come out, and which is amazing, but I always just say, look, are you going to be okay on your own 2 feet? You know, will you be able to manage? And do you have support groups or community groups that will be there to kind of help pick you up? Because, you know, whatever background you come from, you know, if there's a kind of a shock to the family that may be unexpected, whether it's, you know, marrying someone that, you know, different color or different religion, whoever you are, I think just having that financial security can be just so helpful, and also emotional support, etc.
Sorry,
I don't know if that answers your question. I kind of got on a bit of a tangent, but
I wanted to ask you, do you think that people who are, you know, in this space, who may be struggling to come out because they're afraid of the consequences and being accepted, do they tend to overcompensate the way that you did in other areas of their life? Because they feel like, you know, if I can't have this, then let me just secure myself in other areas where I have control. Do they try and regain control in that way?
I'm not sure, perhaps in terms of just kind of investing energy into something else as a way to kind of potentially temporarily avoid kind of dealing with an issue. That was certainly for me, you know, I very much suppressed one aspect, and I was, you know, I'm quite lucky in that I can kind of compartmentalize certain issues in my brain and be like, okay, I can't deal with this now, but it's there, and I'll deal with it when I feel mentally strong and able to do so. And luckily, I guess for me, you know, my attention and energy went into education.
Yeah.
But I can see that was, you know, I was very lucky to be able to kind of put it in that way. But, you know, there are always so many different ways you can put your attention, energy, some good, some bad. And I'm just, yeah, grateful that I made that decision at that point to kind of focus on something positive. You know, because I can see that, you know, someone in that situation could turn to like alcohol or to drugs, etc. In order to kind of get a sense of security and escapism. But I'd never touched alcohol until I was 18. Luckily I didn't have that. And I didn't even know what drugs were. I think when I was up to 18, I lived in such a small bubble.
Yeah.
And so then, yeah, I just kind of forced myself to study, and, you know, then next thing I knew, I was at Cambridge, and I was like, whoa, this is so surreal. And then kind of led on to a whole new exploration of identity and just different people from different walks of life.
We're going to come on to Cambridge, but you mentioned a while back that Bollywood helped you. I want to know, who were your favorite Bollywood actors growing up?
Probably Hrithik Roshan.
Same. Yep. I think I became aware of my sexuality too through Hrithik Roshan.
and probably John Abraham in Dostana.
Yeah.
Because I remember that specific scene in Dostana when I think he was coming out of the sea, And I was just so, and I was quite young, I remember this, and I was just so like, whoa, this, who is this body? Like, and why am I so excited by it? And I'm sure many people in that cinema room also felt the same. But yeah, it's funnily enough, actually, something that's pinged into my head. I remember seeing that. And then in the intermission, I was like to my sister, because I must have been quite young when that came out. And I was like to her, I don't understand, like, his body, he has like zero body hair. Like, does that mean he's gay or something? I remember that because I was curious. I was like, well, this is so different to kind of like my own body maybe at that time, and also kind of my understanding of kind of straight men. And maybe that was kind of another kind of stage of my, not necessarily my identity, but just understanding of the world about kind of metrosexuality, and that the idea that bodies can be all different, it doesn't make you one particular thing or sexuality. That just popped up in my head. I remember exactly where I was in that cinema room speaking to my sister about that.
So you go to Cambridge and you decide to study law. What spurred you on to study law?
I think law for me was, I think at the time it was a means to an end. You know, I knew, I was still very much aware that I needed to get a good job, something that would kind of help me financially just in case anything happened when I came out. So that was pretty much my guiding philosophy in terms of kind of subject and career. Medicine, I, you know, my sister's a doctor, and I was like, hey, she's done that. I didn't particularly enjoy science, but at the time I loved reading, I loved learning, and I was great at writing. And, you know, eventually I was like, well, I think law is probably the one that would kind of be that career for me. You know, I never once had, you know, I was very lucky, I never had any pressure from my family. They were very, the only kind of, I wouldn't call it pressure, but all they wanted us to do was just enjoy and study and to really understand the importance of education. But in terms of our career choices, that always came from, you know, me, myself, and then my sister. She, you know, chose to do medicine. Whereas now I think, you know, I'm so glad I kind of picked a legal career. I love it. You know, I'm an employment lawyer, and so every day I'm working kind of on very tangible human issues kind of within the workplace. And, you know, I think there's, you know, there is a stereotype of, you know, it's, I don't know, Indians being kind of in, you know, doctors, lawyers, etc. But, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You know, it's, I'm very happy to be a lawyer. And I just, yeah, I think the main thing is that people are just not forced into doing a particular role for a particular reason, but just, you know, there's so many different other kind of jobs out there, and as long as people are happy, that's the main thing. And, you know, I do often wonder, you know, if I didn't do law, like, is there like a side, a creative side of me that I never quite explored? And maybe that's something, you know, my 30s I'll look at, because, you know, yeah, like I said, kind of a job was a means to an end. And I never took the time to really delve into exactly maybe what I perhaps wanted to do if it wasn't for law. You know, I graduated from university straight into my LPC, my legal training year. Then I did my 2-year training contract. And then, you know, 5 years later, here I am. So it was very much, I did everything by the book. So maybe, yeah, there will be a time where I kind of take a bit of a pause back and be like, you know, what did you really want to do if it wasn't a means to an end? But I'm really happy. And I kind of love what I do, and the people around me, it's a very kind of safe and inclusive space.
I was going to ask you about that, actually, because obviously you're a lawyer, you're openly gay, you're Indian, and you work in a city. What is that kind of community space like for you? Are there lots of people who are kind of in a similar demographic to you in this workplace? Do you feel like you stick out?
No, not at all. I've, you know, I think the legal industry, as you know, I understand from hearing from lots of people, has changed quite significantly. And, you know, I've only experience nothing but love and support. And it's a very inclusive space, you know, in terms of gender, you know, especially my law firm. But yeah, I've always felt very kind of treated as an equal. And I don't think I've ever, you know, there was one law firm where I kind of went back into the closet, but that wasn't for a particular kind of reason. It was just because it was very small. And I just felt, I didn't feel safe enough. And that's something I need to kind of go back and just really delve into and understand. But no one ever said anything. I think it was just, it wasn't the right time for me at that particular moment. And that was 1 year. But yeah, no one's ever, I've never had any kind of criticisms or, and I have great conversations with kind of lawyers about race, sexuality. I find the race aspect more interesting because a lot of the time I think, you know, sexual orientation, you know, is slightly more hidden sometimes. So it's not something that someone can necessarily see immediately. Whereas race, I'm very conscious of, you know, if I step into a room, which very rarely happens, I would say perhaps a couple of years ago, maybe at more like networking events, you know, I'd be very aware that, oh, okay, I kind of feel a bit exposed here. So I'm kind of the only, you know, Indian person or person, you know, yeah. But now I kind of feel pretty settled and really happy.
Good. I never heard of anybody going back in the closet.
Yeah, it was just for 1 year, essentially just basically not talking about my private personal life or kind of and it does happen you know, to people out in the workplace, you know they for whatever reason feel like it's not the right moment, which is totally fine. But I think I came to the conclusion that I wasn't happy especially when I come out, and it took a long time for me to get to a place where I was really happy with myself. And then especially where I trained at, that was so inclusive and very kind of very protective of me. And then this 1 year where I spent, you know, and that was for no, you know, it was no one's fault. It was just, I didn't feel comfortable. Whereas I feel like now, like the 29-year-old Anish, if I went back there with kind of the confidence I've gradually developed over the years, you know, I think I would probably have been my normal self. I think it was just perhaps, you know, a product of the time, what I was going through, and maybe just, you know, a lack of confidence and, yeah, and I think that's kind of informed me going forward in terms of workplaces. And, you know, I say this to lots of people, you know, it's a two-way interview. You know, as much as they, you know, want you, do you need them? You know, are they ticking the right boxes for you in terms of, you know, senior leadership? You know, how many of them are women, or how many of them are, you know, non-white? And I think those really important questions that I will certainly, going forward in my career, like, really ensure that I get the answers to, because I never want to have that experience again, because it can be quite a lonely place. I think we spend so much time at work, and we want to be somewhere where we're kind of protected and feel safe, and you know, we can kind of share, you know, I went to the park last weekend with my boyfriend rather than partner.
Yeah, I do think it's a bit of a millennial thing as well, because we've still sort of, we're that generation that's still held back a little bit, or still kind of tried to please, or, you know, tried to put ourselves out there in a way where we're there to serve. I think what I've noticed, I don't know, maybe it's my own experience, I might be completely off here, but I've noticed with Gen Z, they're very outspoken. They're very like, no, are you good enough for me, you know? and sometimes I feel like when we're doing these sort of podcasts or conversations, I feel like they relate more to us. Because the younger generation sometimes are just so confident that, you know, I have, now that I'm sort of like management level in my company, and I see sort of the younger lot coming in, they're very much like, yeah, but what are you doing to fix this problem? Or are you good enough for me? Or I'm going to leave, you know? And I think it's so great. It's refreshing, and it's how I aspire to be more as well. BBC, so you did a documentary recently, My Hindu Coming Out Story.
Yeah.
How did that come about? And Tell me how you came out to your mum.
So this is the last question. I came out when I must have been about 21, 22. And yeah, I just took her to a park. I think it was Lee Valley Park. and we had an ice cream. And then, yeah, then kind of after a few minutes of me rambling, I told her. And then that led on, you know, that kind of commenced the start of our journey.
How did she react?
Yeah, it was difficult. I think it was, you know, a shock. And, you know, it was something at the time, I think she would say, was quite unexpected. But, you know, it took me so many years to kind of get comfortable with myself, or, you know, get to a place where I loved myself. And, you know, I never brought that expectation with anyone else with coming out, you know, this belief that they should straight away be accepting, you know, that's just not reality. Yes, it may be kind of the best case scenario, but life doesn't work like that. And so I was never upset that, you know, in the beginning it was tough, because, you know, we're all human at the end of the day. And I was very respectful of, you know, her reaction. And, you know, I never had this belief that from day one she would need to be accepting about it. You know, life isn't kind of black and white like that. And we went on the most incredible, you know, 5-6 year journey together of talking, of learning, of timeouts, of ups and downs and laughter and joy. But never once kind of did I feel that, you know, it was, I had to let it at her own pace. You know, I couldn't force anyone to, you know, accept me. And I kind of say that with other people and say, look, you know, it may take a long time. Acceptance may never come. You know, it's really complex. And, you know, our family are dealing with their own sort of generational traumas and experience their own lived experience as well. So I can't expect them to, you know, this is a very new thing for them as well. Sometimes, especially depending on their, you know, upbringing or what they've seen. And, and then, you know, last year or the year before, me and my mum kind of filmed a video for this charity and basically went through kind of our experiences together of coming out. And to see that kind of, you know, that was 6 years later that we filmed this. And, you know, I would never have imagined that at the very beginning, but I'm so glad I didn't let go, or because I could have very easily been like, if you don't accept me, that's it, I'm leaving. But I just think our lives are a lot more complicated and a bit more nuanced in terms of expecting that as the final, as the immediate conclusion. And, you know, I'm really grateful to have such an incredibly supportive family. And and I think, yeah, just time and patience and, you know, and just, yeah, kind of just taking away expectations and just living in that moment and just chatting through and making sure that I had the right resources to protect myself and my emotions.
That's true.
So, yes, that was mum. And in terms of, yeah, the BBC, so I used to be really religious when I grew up. You know, I'd go to the mandir every Saturday and pray twice a day. I would be involved in concerts or presentations at the mandir on different festivals, and I loved it. I had so much joy from all of that. You know, it felt like a real big community. I used to go to India to an ashram. A few hours away from Bangalore in Puttaparthi, which is where our guru that we used to kind of follow resided. And I got a lot of peace and stability from religion. And then I think after university or during university and coming to terms with my sexuality, I really noticed, I wouldn't say a rebellion, but it just didn't, it stopped becoming, it wasn't a big part of my life anymore. I kind of forgot about religion, and in some ways I felt embarrassed, maybe, that because not many of my friends, and especially in my sort of 20s, I didn't really know many people that had quite a strong affinity to religion, especially the younger generation. And I was like, oh, okay, I feel slightly kind of odd here because I did. So I never really spoke about it. So I never spoke about religion really for a good couple of years with anyone. Mm. And then I think kind of in my 20s and late 20s, there was just something missing in me. And I didn't know what it was. There was like a void. I felt something was incomplete. I'd managed to kind of resolve so many different parts of my identity, sexuality, race, or not resolve, but just understand and explore. And religion was the one that I had suppressed. And I really wanted to understand why something that was such a big part of my life suddenly evaporated into thin air, and whether I could get to a place where I was comfortable with religion, with my current, I guess, new identity. And then the opportunity came up to do some filming with the BBC, and that kind of led on to the documentary. And it was one of the most beautiful experiences, I think, kind of my life. You know, the people that I met, the response as well, you know, just kind of, especially for parents to see, kind of, you know, I'd say I'm quite an ordinary just person from Ilford, and I think a lot of parents may have seen their sons kind of within me, and kind of making things a bit more easier for them to see kind of someone that had kind of gone through the process and survived, and having a family there to support him, and going into Mundos and talking about these issues. Yeah, and it was just a really nice experience to now be in a place where I feel like I've got peace with that part of my identity. And I feel like I can, you know, proudly say and talk about my religious identity without feeling shame or a sense of embarrassment that perhaps I once did in the past.
Hinduism, I feel like it can be quite misconstrued or misunderstood as a religion, as a practice, because, you know, even like we hear about it as we kind of educate ourselves as adults, that actually, you know, the LGBTQ, let's say, like, community was actually very celebrated and very, you know, very much part of the Hinduism stories and the journey, I guess. And what I'm trying to say is, I feel like as we've come into modern society and we go into temples, a lot of those things are twisted or turned around. And some of us grow up thinking certain things to be true when they're not, such as, oh, like, it's wrong to be gay, or it's wrong to go into the mandir with your period, or, you know, just random things that we're just a bit like, what? And, you know, you say that you had a bit of a, you know, falling out maybe for a little while with your religion. I also did when I was growing up. And I think it's actually a lot more common than we realize, because suddenly there are more questions than answers. And suddenly, you know, especially growing up in, you know, in schools where, I know you said that you had a lot of like South Asians around you. I didn't. And I think that Western mindset started like infiltrating my mind and making me feel like, oh, like, this is silly, or, you know, and starting to rebel against like the sort of faiths and beliefs that I was brought up with. And I completely agree with you that when you get to a certain point in your life, you suddenly start to embrace it again, but in your own way.
Yeah.
And that's a really nice thing, because suddenly it's not about what people are telling you. We have the resources and tools to go out there and educate ourselves, to speak to people, to call out things that might not quite be right. And that's a very empowering place to be. And I'm really happy that, you know, you went out there and shared this on a pretty global scale. What was that experience like for you filming? Were you scared? Were you at points like, I don't want this to come out into the world, like, I don't want people to know, like, what was that like for you?
I felt very exposed. you know, I'm an incredibly private person in terms of my kind of, especially on social media, like I don't, will never, very rarely put any pictures of my life, what I do, maybe just community work,
yeah.
but never about kind of, you know, how I'm feeling or I've been to this, I don't know, I'm trying to think of an example, like wedding last week or something. I'm very quite protective of just me and my friends and my family. And so I felt very exposed afterwards because I was like, whoa, people have now got a slightly more a better understanding of who I am.
Mm.
And that was quite interesting because it was just so new to me. You know, people could see the inside of my flat, for example. and yeah, in some ways it was quite nice, you know, to kind of just rip that kind of, you know, to just be a bit more, what's the word?
Rip off the band-aid?
Yeah, rip off the band-aid, a bit more vulnerable in front of people. But yeah, would I do it again? I'm not sure. I don't think so. I think I'm so happy with how it kind of came together. And I really hope that people will find it when they need to find it on, you know, in their own moments of perhaps confusion or struggles. But I'm very comfortable kind of being behind kind of the camera and just, you know, the things that I love to do is kind of the community work, but just not being recorded or, you know, I don't need kind of the kind of visual element. Like I felt really uncomfortable in front of the camera. Like it's not me, you know, I'm a lawyer. Like it's everything I do is kind of behind the scenes and majority is kind of calls, etc. And
do you feel uncomfortable right now?
We're all very exposed still. And I think it's that also worry about saying, you know, something wrong or is someone going to take this in the wrong way? And whereas, you know, in, you know, our careers, we have more time to consider arguments. I have time to kind of write a piece of advice and make sure I've got, you know, I've kind of covered off all my evidence, et cetera, and made sure that my conclusion is all kind of legally sound. But on the spot, you know, whilst filming, I was like, oh my God, what about if I say this? Like in my head, I was like, if I say this, will someone else think this of me? Or will they think I've said something wrong? And that's why I admire all these kind of creatives in the industry who are kind of, you know, like yourself doing such amazing work, but that ability to kind of, you know, think on the spot and be expose yourself to kind of negative, potential negative kind of views was quite scary for me.
Yeah. Did you face negative views?
Well, not on, so, you know, even with social media, I turn off all my, even though I don't really do much, I turn off all my comments. I never kind of, I've always tried and protect myself as much as possible. And no, I didn't have any negative comments on kind of social media. It was all positive. The only negative comments I saw were on the BBC's social media pages. But I was just told not to read them.
Okay.
And, you know, people will always be negative. But yeah, it was all really positive. And, you know, I think the reason why I probably wouldn't do something like that anytime soon is just, you know, just I think with that industry or this industry comes that exposure to the world and people that may not necessarily agree with you, which is absolutely fine.
Yeah.
But I just don't know whether I'm in the right place to be able to kind of hear that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially after everything kind of that I've gone through. And I admire the strength of people in the industry that really kind of expose themselves. And, you know, I have so much admiration for them. And I wish I had more strength to kind of, but yeah, I'm very much happy kind of just doing kind of my charity work on the side. And you know, this was probably the biggest thing I will ever do, and I'm so happy that I did it. And yeah, I think it's, you know, it's time for me to, I think, enjoy life and just really reap the benefits of the kind of experiences that I've had in the last sort of 10 plus years of trying to get to a place where I feel really calm.
Yeah.
And I kind of want to enjoy that now. And this was kind of like the last thing that I was like, oh my God, I can't wait for it to kind of be over. And then I can just breathe and just be happy without a camera in my face.
You know, it is interesting. I echo what you're talking about, which is, you know, mental health is such a big thing for us. And we're acutely aware of our mental health. We know that, you know, if we receive certain backlash or certain comments, then we will feel a certain type of way and it might ruin our day, it might ruin our week. I think what we're often not aware of is the masses of people that listen and think, you know, they take some nugget away or they think, oh my gosh, like, I'm so glad that I watched that today because it makes me feel so much better. Or, you know, it makes me want to talk to my family about what I'm going through. And those people may not necessarily write a comment to you. They might not tell you. In fact, they probably are unlikely to because they're going through their own thing. But it's the people who are probably more deeply unhappy or, you know, they may have like some very opposing views that will actively voice them, you know, keyboard warriors. But that is not necessarily an accurate representation of the impact that you've made through your work. So sometimes it's also about having a little bit of faith and a bit of awareness of like how much we can handle. Mm. And like you said, turn your comments off. Like don't engage if it's not something that, you know, feels right. But just know that what you did, and I will tell you this now, what you did on there, I feel like would have helped so many people. And it was just so wonderful to watch. And it was so lovely to see you just going to these temples and kind of learning and talking openly and sharing and, you know, listening. And also like going to your dance class, which I wanted to touch on because you keep saying you're not creative, but you are. Like the work that you do, whether it's in, you know, the community space or even like taking your dance classes, I think, we're all creative in our own way. True. Yeah. Right?
I do want to enhance that more.
Yeah, that's definitely.
A joyful space.
30s is the new 20s. It's the time to explore. But yeah, being behind the camera, I do definitely resonate because I've started coming on camera more and I'm just like, I don't
You're
know.
You're natural.
Thank you. So are you. So you talked about how you might not want to sort of, I guess, do this for a while because it's kind of done. You know, you want to move on to other things and enjoy your life experiences. But you also do a lot of work in the community. And I want to ask you a little bit about what your aspirations are over the next maybe decade for yourself, personally, but also in the community space. Yeah. And what difference do you want to make?
Big question. Like I've been so lucky to have such an incredible community around me in terms of just role models and support. And I think, you know, when I was going through, or kind of as the end of my kind of challenges in life in terms of identity and difficulties, traumas, whatever, I think I realized at the end, I was like, in order for me personally to make that worth all of that pain and suffering and ups and downs, I just want to invest that back into the community to make it all worthwhile in terms of my learning experiences or kind of sharing experiences that may make other people feel less alone. And so I want to continue kind of, you know, I kind of co-facilitate a monthly support group with the NASA MAP Foundation and, you know, just sharing experiences in a very safe, secure environment. You know, that's the sort of things that kind of bring me joy and happiness and kind of attending events and supporting others. And, you know, providing, you know, if someone needs to talk, for example, to my mom, you know, if their parents are struggling, you know, my mom is now doing that other parents, which is amazing.
Wow. Yeah.
And so it's kind of like all those kind of behind the scenes things I kind of want to focus more on and continue to support, you know, the incredible people in our community, all different ages, community groups, but perhaps from a bit more behind the scenes. And then personally, I think, you know, just, you know, I kind of touched upon it, I think, probably in the documentary. And, you know, I was brought up very, you know, with that, I think many of us with that idea of, you know, marriage and children, and whether that comes from culture or just, you know, wherever it comes from. But it was always something that I really loved, and yeah. I felt that, wow, I really want that. And there's people that, you know, don't want that, and that's absolutely fine, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm.
But I always did, you know, I loved this idea of marriage and having a family. And so I think, you know, investing time into trying to make that a reality, and, you know, yeah, so I think just, yeah, so probably continuing with the community work, maybe behind the camera, and just really enjoying and being excited about the next chapter of life. And, you know, I would love to have kids. I think kids mm-hmm. is something, you know, from such an early age, I always wanted to kind of bring life in this family. And, you know, when I was younger, like, you know, as a teenager, I had no idea how that would happen.
Yeah.
You know, I think in my early teenage years, I was like, okay, well, I'm going to have to marry a woman then. Mm. And obviously then going through my whole identity kind of exploration. And now, you know, obviously having kids is a lot more achievable, I think, for people like me, whether that's, you know, through surrogacy or adoption or fostering. There's so many different options, and it makes me really excited to know that hopefully one day that will be a reality for me. So yeah, so maybe some baby Anishas in the next couple of years.
I think you'll make a great dad, Anish.
Oh, thank you.
If there is a young person listening
mm-hmm.
who may be going through right now what you went through 10, 20 years ago, what would you say to them right now?
Ooh, you're not alone. There's a massive army there to help you and to support you when the time is right for you. It may take some time finding that army, and it may be a bumpy road, but there is an army there, and they will love you and support you. Take it slowly with family. You know, family, our parents, you know, they've had some of them have had a complicated and difficult past as well. And it may not be easy for them at first to accept things, and they may say things that you don't like or are quite mean. It will be fine. Just give it time, give it space. You know, it may take years, it may take months, it may never happen, but just as long as you love yourself and you have that emotional support from other areas, it will be okay. And you're always loved, you know, there will always be someone to love you, but you need to love yourself as well. And that could take time. You know, it took me many years to get to that place.
Yeah.
But it'll be okay. Mm. That's probably my advice.
Thank you for sharing that. And as someone who very notoriously still doesn't fully love herself, I also think that's okay.
Mm,
I would say,
yeah.
But yeah, lean on loved ones. Definitely, I found that to help me so much as well. And yeah, just building on what you said, I mean, we find it so hard sometimes, don't we, to rely on people and to lean on them when we're completely breaking down.
One thing I always do, like whenever I was going through any of these difficulties, like I always used to just say in my head, it sounds really weird, but Anish, I'd be like, you're so lucky to go through this, because just imagine how much you're learning.
Yeah.
You're learning so much, and you're developing all these skills, even though it may be painful to develop those skills, but my God, you're learning.
Mm.
And if your life was so simple and you lived a very, you know, life full of no problems and no issues, my God, would your life be boring? Mm. And I would always say that to myself in terms of that long-term benefit of development. And I feel so lucky now to have gone through what I've gone through, because I've got a community. I've learned tons about myself, the way my body operates, the way my mind operates, developing skills of like resilience and bravery and so much more. And so, you know, whenever I see people in the community, I'm like, it will be it will be okay, but just enhance these skills that you're developing, you know, even though at the time it may feel like horrible, in a few years time you'll look back and be like, wow, I survived that. And that's such a powerful thing to be able to take on in, you know, future lives, to your children. And yeah, that's my little nugget.
Thank you so much for sharing today. Last question for you, Anish. What do you have strong game in?
What do I have strong game in? big question. What do I have strong game in? I think just letting go of expectations and just taking people as they are and just accepting them for who they are and loving them for who they are. I wouldn't say it's strong. I'm getting to that strong game, but that is my kind of where I want my strong game to be.
Love that.
Unconditional love.
Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you for having me.
It was amazing, just wonderful. You're so eloquent and articulate. And I feel like the people, me included, that have you in our lives, we're very lucky to have you. Everything you stand for, it's wonderful. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise, I would say. And yeah, I just really hope that anyone who heard this conversation maybe takes some sort of solace out of it. I definitely did. I feel like I've learned and felt inspired. And I just wish you all the best for all the community work you're doing, all the good things you're doing, all the young people and older people you're helping as well. Because I know there's a lot of kind of more sort of an older community as well who is embracing their sort of identity and sexuality. And it's really wonderful to see. And really just power to all of us. And
yeah.
hope everyone gets to a point where we all sort of learn to love ourselves more.
Yeah.